This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Corporate Service Supply and Manufacturing, a DJI Enterprise dealer providing DJI equipment and support for law enforcement, public safety, construction, and other commercial users of unmanned aerial systems. To learn more, visit the uavdigest.com/css. In by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the uavdigest.com/goengineer. You're listening to episode 267 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, you know, I leave you alone to do the show notes, and you come up with this brilliant narrative and intertwine all of the stories, and I feel like, okay, you know what? If he's going to go to that much trouble, he could do it every week. I feel guilty, though.
It just emerged, you know, as the stories came in, there were a bunch of them that seemed to group around a kind of a certain topic area. And so there is kind of a flow there, I guess. At least that's the idea. We'll see how it pans out.
Well, let's see how much I could screw it up. Okay. But we're going to be really talking about public safety agencies and various public agencies. And of course it's that holiday season. So we need to talk about or what's not happening, and that's package delivery. And, of course, North Dakota working on BVLOS and infrastructure and building out there. As an unemployed person who wants to get into the drone industry, I'm challenged with the fact that I really would like to get into the industry, but I don't do cold well. So Northern New York and North Dakota, as well as Oregon and Alaska. I mean, we have all of these great manufacturing drone organizations, but they are all in cold weather. I haven't quite figured that out yet. but we should get started. Send in the drones, according to the New York Police Department. Now, personally, I think the fact that the Rockettes are using drones this year in their Christmas story is much more important than the New York Police Department.
Are they really?
They are. I forgot to put that story in.
That's bizarre.
We'll have to hunt that. Well, no, they're using the micro drones to support. You know, they've got IBM programmed a bunch of micro drones to fly inside Rockefeller Center, and they interact with the drones. So drones doing high kicks is not something I really want to see.
I can't imagine that.
But the legs of the Rockettes I'll take.
All right.
But let's get back to the New York Police Department.
Yeah.
Launches its new unmanned aircraft systems. They've acquired 14 drones to be used for all sorts of aspects.
Yeah, emergencies of different sorts, like they say rescue missions and crime scenes that are inaccessible to humans, also for hostage situations. And so the technical assistance and response unit will be using these drones. And they put on a little dog and pony show, I guess. They showed a video from a fatal car crash, hazardous oil spill, and also some search and rescue operations, kind of trying to show the public, I guess, and the press some of the good reasons to use drones.
I really want to know how drones get used in a hostage situation. I saw that aspect of it. But they're not going to be used in a regular basis. We're not going to have drones patrolling up and down Fifth Avenue. But they are going to use them for tactical and the technical assistance and response unit kind of is like a little bit of a SWAT team for technology. But of course, you don't fly drones without there being controversy. And the New York Civil Liberties Union is concerned that the drone program is a serious threat to New Yorkers' privacy.
That's right. The New York Civil Liberties Union says that the NYPD's drone policy places no meaningful restrictions on police deployment of drones in the city, in that it opens the door to the police department building a permanent archive of drone footage of political activity and intimate private behavior visible only from the sky. They say they believe the new policy falls short of what is needed to balance the department's legitimate law enforcement needs against the privacy interests of New Yorkers. The Legal Aid Society also shares some of the views of the New York Civil Liberties Union. But, you know, we kind of see this played out across the country, where public service agencies, things like police departments, look towards some great applications for drones, and then the public responds, or in this case, organizations supposedly representing the public respond with a lot of skepticism.
You know, and what's really kind of funny, and I was thinking about this, is why would the New York Police Department, probably the most sophisticated police department in the world, want to violate their cases by doing stuff illegally? And maybe it's they're concerned it's going to be done unintentionally, but I get a little concerned about intimate private behavior visible only from the sky. What intimate private behavior is visible only from the sky, except if you're on a rooftop doing something?
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. I mean, but that being said, if you need this data for a case, you're, as well as, you know, maintaining a chain of evidence, etc., I'm sure the New York Police Department is going to make sure that everything is done above board. I can't see them intentionally trying to invade someone's privacy. You know, a warrant is a warrant. We've watched way too many detective shows showing people that, you know, there are ways to get around warrants per se, but something as technical as a drone, I think they're going to want to dot their I's and cross their T's just before they even implement it.
They're smarter than that to damage their case, to have something thrown out of court because of some deviation, minor deviation from the proper protocol. But as we were contemplating this, our friend Isaac in our Slack team posted an article. This is from Commercial UAV News, detailing the success of the LA Fire Department's drone program. It's kind of a program that, well, it offers some lessons or maybe even some best practices for other public service agencies when they're considering developing a drone program.
During the 2017 Skirball fire, the LAFD used drones for firefighter safety, aerial damage assessments, and checking for hotspots. Two Matrice 100 drones were used, and the objective was to provide incident commanders with better situational awareness, real-time aerial pictures, info, thermal images, and fire locations. After 2 years of planning, they concluded how the drones would be valuable, how they were going to do it, and public awareness, what they would and would not be doing with drones, i.e. transparency, which is what we were just talking about. Doing it right the first time so there's no question that they're doing something wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, when you think about it, it took 2 years of planning. I mean, that sounds like an incredibly long period of time. But when you're dealing with something that raises such emotional issues, as we see in other cases, as in New York City, it really demonstrates to me anyway that this kind of planning, this kind of, you know, developing the community perception of what you're going to be doing and what you're not going to be doing has a big payoff. There's an interesting quote in this article from one of the LA Fire Department employees, a firefighter, who said, I believe in and am committed to this technology, but I've seen programs get shut down. The number one reason that happens is because of privacy concerns. There we go. And things being done that people aren't aware of. They're afraid. So political pressure, whether it's from a city council or wherever else, is put on. Programs will get shut down because it's the expedient thing to do. It'll sink you if you don't take care of it. It's why we were completely transparent in developing the LA Fire Department program. So I think they represent a good model for, you know, how to approach this. And 2 years may sound like a long time, but looking at the other extreme, you're not going to manage the situation if, you know, you have one press event, let's say, to introduce your new drone project, and that's it. People just don't adjust to that kind of change that quickly. So,
and let's face it, privacy is on everybody's radar these days. We actually, our last episode of Airplane Geeks, we talked with Greg from IBM, and it's a privacy and security and transfer of data, etc., is the biggest challenge we have, I guess, in these modern day economies. And good for the LAFD for taking the time and thinking it through. And I think they've got a good point. It's easier to just say, we're not going to do it, than it is to work through the problem. So maybe if anybody is familiar with the LAFD program, maybe we can get them on the show. But let's talk about after the emergency.
Mm.
Fires have been a big deal in California. And this is from futurism.com. Drone seed plant trees after wildfire. We need to restore the forests for number one reason, because mudslides in California. You get rain after fires, and they cause devastating mudslides. I've had friends' houses slide in Laguna Beach. Now, mind you, some of those houses probably shouldn't have been built, but the potential of having a beautiful house that looks over the Pacific Ocean sometimes outweighs the potential of it sliding down the mountain. But in this case, drone seed, and we talked about them back in episode 255 and in 195, has been working to help the California wildfires.
It has. And if you'll recall, when we talked about them previously, the idea is that they use drones to plant tree seeds. But what their system does is that creates first a 3D map using LIDAR, and it uses a multispectral camera to take a look at the soil and vegetation data. And then using an AI model, because everybody uses AI now, I guess, but using
an, oh, come on, it could have been blockchain.
It could have been, yeah, that's from.
Sorry, folks, that's an inside joke.
Yeah, current buzzwords. But anyways, they use that to identify the best location to plant the tree. And the drone seed seed vessels, they call them, I guess, it's a like a puck, like a nutrient puck. And there's a seed in the middle, and it's dusted on the outside with capsaicin, which is intended to keep animals from eating them. And then these are delivered by drone. So here we go with a great application again. And this is the post-disaster kind of response.
What's really, I really like this cap thing. This nutrient puck with a seed in the middle with the food so it can get started. I wish my gardening was like this. I would just be able to put a puck in the ground and you get a tree later. It's kind of science fiction-y, you know, when you talk about terraforming planets. I mean, this is the way you terraform them. You give everything to start off with, and then the tree figures out how to grow it on its own. So pretty neat. Drone seed's a really neat project. And we've talked about, and I'm sure we're going to talk more as they move forward, maturing their products, growing beyond what they have now to
reach new
tower
heights.
Tower over.
I knew where you were going with that.
After 9 years, you should.
I guess so. So drone seed does have approval, FAA approval, for multi-craft over 55-pound UAVs. These are not little phantom-sized things. These are really pretty decent-sized aircraft. And so they can actually work these drones in swarms of up to five aircraft, which lets them cover larger areas. So this would be the first commercial post-fire restoration project. And they're planning on starting that this month. As we record this now, it's December 2018, and they're supposed to be beginning now. earlier when we looked at Drone Seed, they were testing this out, doing some pilot projects.
There's that phrase again.
I know, pilot project. But so this is the first for real application. So it'll be exciting to watch, and we certainly wish them the best luck. And also for the people in California who are really reeling from the devastation of these fires. And so this is a way that drones can address at least a little part of that.
And Max, when we started this is the kind of thing we wanted to talk about. Positive, progressive, forward-thinking ideas, that people wouldn't have thought of. This is an amazing, amazing technology. Let's talk about more public safety. The Los Angeles Area UAS Disaster Conference to explore evolving roles of drones in public safety, emergency management, and wildfire fighting. And there's going to be two conferences in 2019, the UAS Disaster Conferences. You can find them at uasshows.org. One in Los Angeles, March 8th and 9th, and one in Miami, April 11th and 12th. So, Max, this is best practices, I guess, is the best. If we were going to talk about new uses and taking that knowledge that both like the New York Police Department and the LA Fire Department have used and come up with best practices that they can spread so that we don't get those kind of controversies about privacy we get when these other communities try to implement this stuff.
Right, exactly. And I mean, this is a really focused kind of a conference. I mean, we've seen other drone conferences that really cover a lot of territory, are pretty broad in scope. This is pretty focused. It's intended for representatives from government, industry, and academia. Right, that's not much different. But they're going to discuss, they're going to showcase the role of UAS in preparing for disasters, responding to disasters, and recovering from them. And there'll be presentations and workshops, and they say even live flight demonstrations. Now, I think this is the second year for these. I think maybe Miami was this year in 2018. And so if you want to learn more about this, as David said, the website is uasshows.org. But I find that some of the links in there are not working real well, and some of them point to the 2018 version of this. So it kind of looks like they maybe haven't made the cutover yet cleanly to the two shows that are going to be in 2019 in Los Angeles and Miami. But I would expect them to deal with that pretty quickly. So if you're in the public service sector, law enforcement, firefighting, any of those sorts of things, emergency response, this sounds like a good opportunity to attend and really learn some great stuff. Now, there's no schedule of speakers or seminars specifically yet, but I think it really holds out a lot of promise.
Cool. And it's funny because as we record this, we're a week out from the very large earthquake in Alaska, and there was a lot of drone footage for surveying the damage that occurred in that 7.0 earthquake. So there's a lot of things that can be useful. And we'll reach out to the Drone Disaster Conference, and maybe we can line up some guests or line up some topics for them coming in the 2019 year. Okay, Max, as we record this on the 6th of December, we have 19 days left before Santa Claus implements his drone delivery, but that seems to be far more successful than anybody else in the world because he's got it implemented and nobody knows it and nobody gets to see it, but it works. But in this case, we've got Google and their spinoff Wing, and they say they're going to be operational in 2019. Mind if I not hold my breath?
That's right. They do say by the end of 2019, but they are making some progress with a flight test program in Helsinki, Finland. And that's going to start in the spring, or it's scheduled to. And customers will be able to order items through an app. The drone would be able to deliver packages weighing up to 1.5 kilograms, a little over 3 pounds. And they say that during this trial period, deliveries will be free. They offer the ability to pick up packages from a business or pick them up from a home, fly them to their destination, lower the package to the ground. That was an interesting clue as to the delivery method, right? We've talked about that. Does the drone land and release the package? Does the drone lower the package on some kind of a cable or something? And it sounds like the latter here. Another interesting aspect is the UTM system that they intend to use.
The UTM system plans and manages the drone's flight path. They plan routes around each other along buildings, trees, and other obstacles. They're really trying to condense this. Where it's occurring is Helsinki, Finland, and Australia. I'm interesting to know what kind of weather these drones are capable of flying in, if they're flying in Helsinki, Finland. I hope snow. How do you de-ice a drone?
I don't think you do.
I want to know how you, because, and I say this lovingly because of our friend Jennifer, who likes being out on the snowpad in the middle of a Midwestern airport. When she doesn't want to be an accountant, she wants this de-ice aircraft. How do you de-ice a quadcopter? You know, so in Australia, you know, how do you keep a quadcopter cool? So it's interesting that Google or Alphabet is pushing forward. Well, one of those things we talked about when we first started this podcast, or even before we started this podcast, was delivery by drone. Amazon was going to be delivering by drone in 5 years. Well, guess what? Congratulations, Amazon. It's 5 years later, and I haven't gotten my package, and I even moved away from an airport so you could do it.
Yeah. You know, I tell you, when you make a prediction about being able to do something, and that prediction is 5 years into the future, you know, almost anything seems doable in 5 years, because it just feels like it should be enough time to accomplish almost anything.
Are you talking from experience? That sounds like something that might have come out of Pratt Whitney.
No, I'm just saying 5 years, you know. And besides, if you make a prediction that something's going to happen in 5 years, people tend to have a short-term memory, and no one's going to remember that you made that prediction 5 years ago, except we all do in this one. And it seems like Amazon is maybe... learned their lesson, at least in terms of predicting things like this, because they say now that they're going to stay away from fixed timelines. So no new revised timeline. It will happen when it does. I think Amazon clearly still has the will to be successful at this. I think we'll see it eventually in some form or another, but it's almost impossible to predict when that'll occur.
Okay, Max, here's the bet. Getting towards the end of 2018. Somebody write this down, that this is the app. What comes first, flying taxis or drone delivery? Well, actually, you know what? Let's throw that out to our listeners. What do you think will occur first? Delivery by drone or people delivery by drone, otherwise known as flying taxis?
In software, they used to talk about the killer app. You know, you might have a capability, some hardware or something that seems amazing, but it just needs that killer app to make it enticing enough to be a success. I'm wondering if we haven't yet seen the killer app for drones, you know, quote unquote, by analogy. I don't know. I mean, we do have these great ideas, or at least some people would call them great, about package delivery and autonomous taxis and things like that. But the hurdles are pretty significant. And I don't know, David, maybe sometime in the next 5 years, something else will come along, some other kind of an application that will just light the thing up and cause it to take off. But I don't know.
Well, let's move to Australia and we'll see. Airbus Defense and Space announced the opening of the world's first high-altitude pseudo-satellite, or HAPS, flight base using the launch of their Zephyr UAV in Wyndham, Western Australia. This was from UASmagazine.com. And so Australia is now got a UAS base for high-altitude pseudo-satellites.
Yeah, and Airbus is pretty excited about this. There's a press release. We'll have a link to that in the show notes, as well as this article from UAS Magazine. The article says that, according to Airbus, the Zephyr will bring new see, sense, and connect capabilities to both commercial and military customers, providing the potential to revolutionize disaster management, including monitoring wildfires and oil spills. So Airbus says that this is going to be the start, the beginning of various Zephyr flight campaigns that will be undertaken from this particular site with different customers. So I think they have some, you know, some things lined up maybe that they're not ready to talk about yet. But, you know, here again, we have, Australia being the site for some testing of some unmanned aircraft. I don't know, David, do you think it matters that these kinds of activities are happening so often outside the United States?
Well, you know, no. In fact, we've talked about the Zephyr in the past. And one of the things about the Zephyr is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I am, is it's solar powered.
Right. Yes.
Well, you know, there are portions of the United States that are not necessarily adaptable to something as large as a solar-powered pseudo-satellite.
Yeah.
I know Western Australia would be a good place, tropical climate, lots of sun, calm air. You know, so we talk about, I forget what we talked about a couple of episodes ago about them testing it in Puerto Rico. You know, you have to go where, you have to be able to test where you can get the best benefit. I don't think that there may be some places, there might be some types of products that you're just never going to be able to test here in the States, either the continental or Alaska or Hawaii. But doesn't mean that they aren't products geared for it. But then again, I don't know of anywhere in Australia that you could test in sub below zero temperatures your quadcopter, where you could do it in North Dakota or Alaska or upstate New York. So I'm going to go to Western Australia with the pseudo-satellite for my new job. but if you're talking about testing and inclement weather, let's talk about the $30 million UAS infrastructure proposal to support statewide beyond visual line of sight operations that's occurring in North Dakota.
This is a proposal from the governor of North Dakota. And he says he wants to spend this money to build out this infrastructure for BVLOS operations. The investment, the $30 million, would establish a statewide network for use by state agencies, local communities, the commercial sector, basically everyone, to include precision agriculture, automated farming, things like that. That's maybe a big opportunity area for this.
And North Dakota really is banking on UASs. University of North Dakota and Grand Forks, they're all in. But if you can imagine this statewide network being built as a prototype, you could then transport it to other states. So this kind of infrastructure that you're building, they're willing to take the chance to build the infrastructure and learn from the mistakes and learn how to improve it. And it'll be a benefit to the other states as well as other nations, et cetera. So it's a really good investment. Cheers to North Dakota for realizing that this might be a potential future and an in-depth future, and using their infrastructure that they have set up there, an aviation a former Cold War military aviation infrastructure, and converting it to a 21st century test center for UASs. So even if it is cold. So
yeah. And it's something that has value not only for the residents, the companies, the activities that take place in North Dakota, but like you say, David, it's an opportunity for North Dakota companies to develop this kind of expertise that can then be promoted, sold, utilized in other areas. So good payoff. And the Grand Forks UAS test site is intended to be part of this too, working with federal agencies to ensure regulatory compliance, which of course is a big thing. All right, David. Well, I think that's about it for this episode. You want to thank everyone for listening. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. You can find us at the UAVdigest.com. And if you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, that, of course, can be found at the UAVdigest.com/267. So be sure to check out the show notes. We've got links to all of the news articles that we talked about, some of the companies, links to other things. I don't think we didn't have a video this time. Usually the show notes have at least one or two videos that you can watch right in the show notes, not this episode, but you're certainly welcome to go peruse some of the back catalog and watch some of the videos there.
And that dovetails to the, we need your help. You find a good drone video, send it to us at feedback@theuavdigest.com. And so we can give you credit, and we like seeing them and we like responding. You can go to our Twitter feed at UAV Digest. You can go to Facebook, facebook.com/UAV Digest. What we really want you to do is become part of our Slack listener team. And you can do that by sending a request to feedback@theuavdigest.com. And if you haven't taken the time to send us that email, do so, because it's growing by leaps and bounds and everybody seems to be having a good time and starting to have real in-depth conversations. And of course, if you like what you hear, please leave some reviews on Stitcher.com or Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or any other podcatcher you might use. You can find some swag at our Cafe Press store, but most of all, just send us a line, drop us a line and say hi, and tell us a little bit about what you're doing with drones. We want to grow the community and we want to hear more about what you guys are doing. So I guess with that, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.